Hello. Oh, it's already on. All right, so just a reminder for everyone before we get started, submit your tech ed evaluations. The mobile app is still having problems, so you need to do it online. Look at that. All right, so today's session is DBI 414. This is a deep dive into the Microsoft Analysis Services tabular model. We're going to talk about sort of what is the tabular model, what's the structure. We're going to talk about processing. We'll talk about the storage engine for the tabular model and just some other sort of administrative things. Just a little bit about myself. I was a program manager at Microsoft, working on the analysis services, modeling, and client tools team. I did that straight out of college. I basically worked on new features for Power Pivot and the formula engine itself, coming up with new DAX functions and the like. But I noticed just a few months ago that we sort of had a problem, and that was our PM, program manager to dev ratio, was way off. See, we could dream up all of these beautiful, cool features way faster than we can implement them. So I took advantage of an opportunity, and I am now actually a software engineer at Microsoft on the model authoring team. So now, instead of getting to wave my hands and say things into existence and hope that it just happens magically, I actually get to take those things, turn them into realities, right? So I'm very excited about that. Another thing you might be interested in is every time I look at this slide, I see that guy in the middle, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be exactly what I look like in like 10 years. So just a fun fact. I hope everyone is having fun at Tech Ed so far. Lots of good sessions, some cool stuff. I know that this session also overlaps slightly with the Tech Expo Happy Hour. I don't know if anyone was planning on going to that, but we'll get you there in time. So, like I said, today we're going to look at the tabular model. We'll look at the tools that we use to build them, the VertiPack engine, which is the kind of the magic behind the tabular model. We'll talk about processing, what happens when you process, what do all the different processing options mean, and then just some tips for optimization and how you can kind of tweak your model to make it be as effective as it can be. We'll talk a little bit about security, things like that. So, I guess I have a clicker here, huh? Okay, so I feel like every analysis services presentation I've seen given by Microsoft almost has this starts with this slide. Has anybody seen this before? Yes, so this is, when we think about BI on the product team, we sort of divide it into three chunks, right? There's personal BI, which is often how these things start. Click. Oh, I have magic. Okay. Which is someone building just a model in Excel. They just have some data on a spreadsheet, or maybe they have access to a database somewhere. They bring it in, they mash it up, they make some quick pivot tables, and they're done. Right? Sometimes these things, you know, come into existence and disappear, you know, within days or weeks, and that's about it. But sometimes they kind of gain traction, and what happens is people start to get interested, right? And you show a coworker, and they think that's really cool, and it helps them throughout their business processes, right? So now we put it onto Power BI. We go and put it on maybe Power Pivot for SharePoint so that everybody has access to it. It's one document that we can all share and use. And then what happens is IT starts to notice sometimes, and they say, oh my God, everybody's going to this SharePoint site and slamming this document. Anybody in the world has access to this. Maybe we don't want, you know, MS Finance data. You accidentally shared it to everyone, right? So they want to take control of it, put some security on it is probably the number one thing there. Set it up on a proper server where we can manage the life cycles and things like this. So, and that's sort of corporate BI, and that's analysis services proper, and that's mainly what we're going to be talking about today here, right, is what happens when you get to this far right section. And the nice thing about the tabular model is that actually throughout this whole process, it's all been exactly the same thing. It turns out inside of the Excel workbook, right, we actually have a tabular database. If you are enterprising, you might be able to find it in the file itself. And so basically what happens is as we go along this process, we just keep that same model. Someone built in Power Pivot, upgrade it, and you could do some more things once you get into the kind of corporate context. So like I said, if we think about design tools for doing these sorts of things, right, if you're in sort of the personal context, what happens is I'm in Excel. It feels like Excel. This is a lot of times power users of Excel. And like I said, solutions live for just a little while or can kind of graduate. If you go and do things in SSDT, then we are have integration with Visual Studio, right? So you can put these into source control. You can do all kinds of stuff like that. You can manage partitions on your data. You can use deployment scripts, all kinds of good stuff. And like I said, this is where we're going to be talking about things today. The big advantages of the once we get into corporate BI and SSAS is scalability. Number one, partitions. We can use them to manage our data more effectively. There's a feature, Direct Query. I don't know how many people, how many have used Direct Query before? Nobody, or nobody wants to admit to it. So Direct Query is actually a cool technology. We're very interested in growing as we move forward with the product, which is now we can send DAX queries and things. We can translate them into the native language of a data source, so we can have real-time querying of a data source as someone's reporting over it. Something that's very cool, lots of interest there. Manageability is another one. With things like SSMS, AMO, PowerShell, we can actually use and build applications that manage our model for us, right? We can automate adding partitions, deleting them, processing, all these kinds of things. Security is obviously, like I said, a really big one. We can have row-level security, very fine-grained control over what users have access to, and that's very important in the corporate environment. And like I said, finally, development tools, integration with source control, team build. There's a lot of belief on the product team. Well, we say team build. We definitely want to make that a little bit better. There's some room to improve there to allow multiple developers to work on these models at the same time. So, like I said, we'll just kind of get the quick things out of the way. First, let's take a look at using the tools properly. So just a fair warning, it took me forever to get SSDT BI installed. If you go around and you're trying to get it and you search for SSDT, you'll find Visual Studio SSDT is actually just the SQL Server data tools, and you have to search for SSDT BI to get the Visual Studio templates. So just a fair word of warning, SSDT BI, Business Intelligence Templates. You can get it on the Microsoft Download Center. So what happens a lot of times, like I said, a kind of a common life cycle for these models is it's something that started out that maybe an analyst did inside a company, and it kind of gained traction. And then all of a sudden, we want to kind of graduate this into something that's properly run on a server. So the way we can do that is if we just open up SQL Server Management Studio, and we can connect to our analysis server instance. And if I want to get this thing up and running as quickly as possible for my users, I can see all my databases here. And if I right-click, I have the option to restore a database, like you would think with just a normal kind of a SQL database. And I also have the option to restore from Power Pivot. So what I can do is, like I said, inside of these Excel workbooks, there's actually a tabular model stuffed away in there. So what we could do, I'll just copy my path. I can give a name to my database. And remove the quotations from the path. Okay, and so what I could do is I could just restore right away. I can get this up and running so that people can continue on with their life uninterrupted. So you don't have to wait for that. I already have it pre-baked. This is Visual Studio. I'm sure lots of you use this already with SSDT, BI. And we can actually just open up, once we have these plugins installed, we can say, I want to make a new project. I can choose analysis services. I get a bunch of options here. I can do multidimensional, or I can do tabular. I can, just like we did in SSMS, I can import from a PowerPivot workbook, or I can actually, once I've uploaded to my server, I can actually just connect to it there and create a new project that way. For my case, I actually already have a project, so it'll open up a little bit quicker. We don't have to wait for it to process and things. So once we have our database deployed properly, let's see, what did we name this guy? AW Tabular. So here we go. You can see the connection strings inside there, right? You can go in and modify them if you want to pull from a different data source or something. You can adjust the impersonation info, all the things that you would expect there. Here, because it's a tabular model instead of multidimensional, instead of having cubes and measure groups and all these things, right? I just have tables. Every table can act as a dimension table. I can do aggregations on all of my tables. And then roles. This is where we can define some security and say who has access to what information. And then also the big advantage of having something in SSAS is I can manage my partitions and do processing and script out things like that. So if we go into the properties of the tabular model, you can see direct query mode. Like you would expect, there's a model, all these sorts of properties you can set. We'll talk about some of these as we go on. Just another note on partitioning. Like I said, partitioning in the tabular model is you can do it on any table, unlike the world of multidimensional. What we can do is if you go onto a table and choose partitions, we actually have one partition to start. That contains our query for all the data. If I go and edit the partition, we could just see it's just the SQL statement that I used to import. So what we can do for modifying all these things is I can just create a new partition, or I can copy the existing one if I want to use it as a template, and I can just basically specify whatever SQL query I want. I can just add usually like a where clause to get some new information. So for instance, if I wanted to make a new partition that was only this year's data, right, I could just say where, you know, fact internet sales year, calendar year is 2014, right? And I can manage them like that. I can process these partitions individually, so I can only suck in the data that I need to have right then. We also have this option in this window for scripting. The advantage here is if I just, I can send this out as a script. It's just an alter command, XMLA. So what I can do with this then is I can, like I said, I can use some applications. I can write maybe a C# app that can go and manage these things for me. I can just modify this XMLA each time to say, okay, today create a new partition with today's data, process it. Create a new partition with today's data, process it. Similarly, I could do the same by deleting them. Maybe I only want to hold in maybe the trailing 3 months of data, right? I can delete these partitions as they come. I can merge them together tons of great stuff that's possible with this sort of scripting commands. So, now that we have kind of the quick stuff about using the product out of the way, let's talk about Vertipack. So Vertipack, or I think it's marketed as the X-Velocity engine, is kind of the secret sauce of the Tabular model. It's the storage engine. It's what makes PowerPivot super fast. Unlike a traditional data store, where we have data stores and data stored in rows, right? We have, you know, customer ID, store number, sales amount, all of these things, right? And we store each row of data as a single unit. Vertipack is actually a columnar store, which means that columns are stored as the objects rather than the rows. And so the advantage here is lots of times columns have repeating values, right? If we think about like sales transactions, a ton of them will happen on the same date, right? And so we can take advantage of that fact by then compressing that down. We don't need to store duplicate values. We can do kinds of cool things there. So let's talk about Vertipack. Vertipack has sort of three design principles. And the first is this. Does anything come to mind when you see this car here? Can you guess what the first design principle is? Expensive. Yes. Power Pivot is actually free. So hopefully we can all understand that, hey, you know, we're offering this awesome thing actually for free. It's a good thing. It's not expensive. Performance. Right? Performance. Everything we do with the Vertipack engine is all about performance. Whenever we have the option to make a trade-off between, you know, query performance and any other system activity, right, we're always going to choose performance. It's the most important thing in our designs. Fast. Performance. Number two. This is perhaps a bit labored, but when you have a racetrack, right, and a car going around, the majority of the time is spent doing what? Zooming around, right, as fast as you can, go. But every once in a while, right, the car needs to stop, refuel, get recalibrated, everything in the pit. And we could kind of think of the Vertipack engine and the Tabular model being designed in a similar way. What happens is our zooming is querying, right? We want to make sure querying is as fast as it can be. So, like I said before, with performance, we optimize everything for query performance. And we're willing to make the trade-offs in the pit stops, as it were, with processing, right? If it means that we take a little bit longer to process your data and kind of in the getting ready phase, we'll take that hit every time if it means faster query performance. The idea being you only process your models every so often, right? And query performance is really key, especially with things like Power View, interactive visualizations. Query performance is much, much more important to us than processing performance. And the last one, unlike in MoLAP, when we have stored aggregations, when you bring in new data, you have to reprocess and sort of reload everything. With the Tabular model, we want to be able to pull in as much data as we can, process it, and go as fast as we can without having to reload things all the time. So instead of storing aggregations, we just have measures and things that are evaluated at query time. We don't want to force these reloads. So I hope you enjoyed these nice car pictures. I promise I wasn't clever enough to come up with them myself. So Let's talk about the life cycle of a model. So, number one, what happens when we process a model? We read data from the data source. Then we encode it. Everything in the tabular model gets encoded. Strings, integers, everything, once it comes in, we take this time, we encode it. We'll talk about this in a moment, so that we can do this compression. And this, like I said, is what makes the tabular model special. This is why we can have this fast query performance, and we can take up much less space than you would typically expect from a model. Sometimes we can get compression rates up to like 90x. It's pretty incredible. And then finally, when we do a process, there's a step called process recalc. What happens here is we rebuild any ancillary structures that we have in the model, like relationships, these and things like that. We'll talk about these each in turn as we go. So if we think about a table that we have in the tabular model, I have a table T1, and it has these three columns. It has a connection to a data source, and tables store their data in columns, right? So I have one of these for each column. We actually store these columns in segments themselves, so it may be that we have multiple segments per column, right? And then we also store a dictionary so that we can get back these values as we do this encoding and compression. We'll talk about each one of these sort of in turn. So like I said, there can be multiple column segments per column when we store them. And then we have calculated columns. Calculated columns are something that you can add on to the tabular model by just providing a DAX expression. We'll recompute them and during process recalc. Calculated columns are stored just like any other column in your model. They're stored in column segments. We build these dictionaries. The interesting thing about calculated columns is that we actually don't get any compression on them. So what that means, kind of in practice, is that if you can move a calculated column to something defined at the data source level, then we would advise that you do that so that you can get this compression. Sometimes that's not possible depending on the types of expressions you're using to define them. We build hierarchies behind the scenes for faster query processing. And then we build a relationship index that's separate from the tables. This allows us to accelerate the lookups. We don't have to connect these tables directly. We can handle RI violation, referential integrity violations better with this sort of separate relationship structure. And then, like I said, mentioned before, we have partitioning of data. What this really is just sort of a management thing to help you have better control over what data is stored and at what level you want to process it. Any table can have partitions. Like I said, they're only relevant for segmenting data. Now, when I first got explained this, someone just showed me this giant picture and said, see, now you know, tabular model. Look, it's so clear with T1, C1, all these good things. I'm going to actually break it apart a little bit. Hopefully, we can sort of talk about this process as it goes. So because the tabular model stores things in columns, let's consider we just pulled in maybe our products table. Has 13 million rows, and here's a single column from the products table, color. The first thing we do is we encode all of the values into integers, right? So here we just say we'll assign red 1, green is 2, blue is 3. And the reason we want to do this encoding is for compression, and then also it's much faster to be able to perform operations on integer values rather than having to store the entire string itself. We call these data IDs. So if you read any documentation and things that mention data IDs, that's what these are. they're assigned during the encoding process. When we come up now, so here I've said red is 1, green is 2, blue is 3. Seems straightforward, but how do we actually get these values, right? There's two ways that we encode columns. We do value encoding. This is done on numeric data types. Either we store the value itself as it is, or we'll perform some simple arithmetic on it. For example, let's say I have three values in my column, three distinct values, 1.5, 3.0, and 4.5. If we want, we can encode these in such a way we'll notice that they're each divisible by 15 and multiples of 10. So we can actually multiply by 10, divide by 15, right? And we can actually just store these as 1, 2, and 3 rather than 1.5, 3.0, 4.5. This means that we don't have to take the extra space required to store the decimal values. So the second type of encoding that we do is hash encoding. Hash encoding is basically we build a hash table. We can get the values. It's forced on text data types, but it also depends. It can actually be used for integer and numeric data types as well. It sort of just depends on the values that are in your columns. We do this as we see the data. What happens often, value encoding is used for tightly grouped sets of data, dense data sets, and hash encoding is used when values are more sparse, maybe more far apart. And the thing to note is that hash encoding takes longer than value encoding. So because of this, if you can, when you have a column with some text data in it, maybe in the data source itself, it's brought in as text, if you want to use it and kind of speed up the encoding process, if you convert it to a numeric data type, you'll have a chance at getting this value encoding. The encoding type is not something you can set by yourself. We have a set of algorithms that determines what sort of encoding we want to do. It's a greedy algorithm, so that means that as we're bringing in data, we see what will get us the most benefit as we bring these first couple, you know, 1,000 rows in. So when we define our partitions and when we bring in our data, if we want to make sure we get the best column encoding we can, we want to make sure that we order our data so that you have sort of a representative sample, if you can. And then, like I said, depending on your data, again, if you have decimal data and you're only interested in a few levels of precision or if that will do for your purposes, you can actually change it to a currency data type. And then just change the formatting to not show the number. This allows us to store even fewer bits for your data. Decimals can have much higher precision than currency, but if you're willing to only allow yourself two decimal places of precision, maybe that's the thing to do for you. Like I said, you can avoid re-encoding. So imagine I am bringing in, I'm reading in the data, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, right, so on and so forth. And then, so we'll start encoding that with value encoding. And then all of a sudden, if I see maybe an erroneous value, I see 600 million, right, all of a sudden that sort of arithmetic, the simple arithmetic I was using to do this encoding, it doesn't really work now anymore with this kind of outlier. So what that means is we have to switch our encoding to hash encoding. This can take some time to do. You'll get a hit on your processing speed. So if you can kind of get a representative sample of values, if possible, when bringing this in, that's great. The problem is oftentimes it's not super feasible to do, unfortunately. So once we encode these columns, we have the data IDs. We put these into a dictionary so that we can get back the actual value. Oops. So we mentioned before column segments. When we bring in columns of data, like I said, we actually split it into segments to allow us to perform queries faster and sometimes do calculations in parallel. The default for a segment size is 8 million rows. So that means if I were to bring in something, I bring in a set of 13 million rows, it gets split into 8 million and 5 million row segments. When we do processing and querying, we actually can use one core, one CPU core per segment. So that's something that to keep an eye on. This, the segments, something you can have control over in the model properties. Like I said, there's a couple properties that control the segment size. The first is default segment row count. That's the number of rows in the segment. If you set it to zero, we'll default to 8 million rows. In analysis services, it's 1 million in Power Pivot. We actually require that the value be a power of 2. The reason is when we're doing our compression and encoding, we do some bit shifting to make things a little bit faster. So it should be it needs to be a power of 2 so that we can do that. If we set this to a larger segment size, what happens is we usually get better compression, and we can get faster queries with lower overhead of having to switch segments and join data back together. If you have smaller segment size, then when we're doing our processing, we don't have to work with as many values, and you can sometimes speed that up. There's another interesting property as it relates to column segment size, and that is processing time box seconds per million rows. What this actually does is when we're going to decide how we're going to encode it and compress it, we time box this operation. So we get so long to look at it, and then we have to go. The default is 10 seconds. Like I said, this is sort of greedy algorithms that we use to try to get the best encoding first. If we increase the value beyond 10 seconds, we can almost always get better compression. You can get better query performance as a result. But obviously, if you allow, if you increase the time box value, processing is going to be slower. But if you have a large number of columns or something, this is sort of important because that way we can be as efficient as possible when storing your data. This is something you can find out, and we'll take a look at in the profiler with the discover command, discover storage table column segments. So just to show you an example, we looked at the processing and compression time for a 4 billion row table with the default time box value of 10 seconds per million rows. The table was compressed to 41 gigs. If we kind of tweak these values a little bit, we can get it compressed all the way down to 25 gigs, so that's quite a bit of improvement. The problem is, like I said, you're going to take a hit on processing time, so instead of processing for 5.5 hours with the default, we actually took 21 hours to process. So it's something to keep in mind depending on the data and the speed at which you need to get this new data in and processed. Something to think about, but you can definitely get big improvements if you adjust the value. And finally, compression. Like I said, compression occurs per segment. What happens, we may compress things differently, but when we decompress these values, you'll get the same data ID. We can handle that. So very quickly. We can actually take advantage. As I mentioned before, we can look at some of these encoding values. Let me jump over to my laptop. By looking at the data management views and analysis services, the DMVs. Here, I'll open a workbook I've created. Reading data. So in my case, I've actually imported with these connections. Let's take a look at this one. And I have a column segments table here. If I go and we look at table properties, you see I use the discover storage table column segments DMV. And what we can do here is we can take a look at sort of some information that we store about how these columns are encoded and compressed. So for instance, we can see the allocated size for each column. This is how many bytes we decide to use for storing this column. And then you can also take a look at compression. Similarly, you can see a column encoding value. There's two possible values, 1 and 2. 1 it means that the column was hash encoded. 2 means that it was value encoded. So I can build a little pivot table quickly and see the column encoding used for each one. And as I mentioned earlier, depending on the data type and the actual data that's in the column itself, we can actually end up giving a hash encoding to integer data types. Sometimes we can't always use value encoding. So just something to be aware of if you have some processing performance issues, sometimes it's useful to come in and look at these, see how we're encoding your data, and see if there's anything you can do to kind of speed that up, like I said, to make sure maybe you want to increase the time allowed to compress a certain column or so. So the next step that we want to talk about in the life of a tabular model is processing. There are, I believe, 6 different ways that we can do processing. There's process data. What this does is just simply bring in, basically refresh the data coming from the data source. This doesn't do anything else beyond just reading in the new rows of data. There's process recalc, which, like I said, will rebuild your calculated columns. It'll update your relationships. It'll take care of all of those sorts of structures. Process full is a combination of both data and recalc. There's process default, which is process data, and if needed, we'll take a look at what data we brought in, and we'll recalc the associated tables. There's process clear, which will simply wipe out all of the data from the table. Process add, which is used to create new segments and merges them together. What happens here, usually you will want to do a process add if you're just bringing in kind of incremental sets of data. That way you don't have to suck in the entire thing back again, right? If I have maybe a 2 terabyte database that I'm connected to, I want to segment these with partitions so that I can only, I only need to bring in the data as needed, right? So I can create a new partition. I can say, give me, you know, the rows where, you know, with today's date, perhaps, do a process add, and I only have to refresh sort of those rows of data. And then finally, there's process defrag, which is when we're bringing in these data, this data, and we're encoding it, and we're building these dictionaries. We never really said anything about what happens when we remove things. And what actually happens is we never actually go through and clean up these dictionaries. So what can happen is, if you imagine, like I said, I'm only storing maybe the last 3 years worth of data in my model. The next time a year comes up, I'll delete the old partition. What happens is I will still have the values in the dictionaries. They won't ever be used for anything, but it will be taking up space on my server. So every once in a while, you'll want to run process defrag to kind of clean those up and compress a little bit. You can do all those things we just mentioned here from SSMS. If we just go to a table and choose process, we have the option to pick the tables we'd like. Here you can do each one of the processing options. What we don't want to do is imagine I want to process several tables. If I come in here and I do process full, that does process data and a process recalc, right? So we'll bring in new data, recalc, bring in new data, recalc, bring in new data, recalc. That's actually pretty inefficient because every time we bring in this new data, we're doing a recalc, and at the end of the day, that's not actually, only the last recalc is the only one that is actually being effective for us. So when you're bringing in, when you want to process lots of tables, the best thing to do is to come in. Maybe you've added several partitions across many different tables. What you want to do is do a process data on each one of them, and then finally at the end, one process recalc. It will speed things up significantly. So let's take a look at the different phases of the processing. If we're reading in a segment of rows, first we'll read it in and we'll encode the data. Then we'll read in another row or another set of rows and encode the data. While we're doing that, we'll start compressing the previous segment that we brought in, so we can actually do these two actions in parallel, and then finally we'll compress that segment, and then at the end we can do a process recalc, rebuild the columns, calc columns, hierarchies, and relationships. There's an interesting case of the third segment that we bring in. When we process this data, when we pull in the rows, you'll remember it was 8 million rows is the default segment size. The first segment we allow to stretch and become twice as large as the defined segment size. The purpose of this is we want to optimize for smaller tables. It turns out there's actually a large majority of tables fall between sort of the 8 and 16 million rows. So what we want to do is, if we can, we'll read it all into one segment so that we can query it faster, we can compress it better. What this does mean is, if we stretch that one to grow and we find out we still have more rows coming in, we'll split it into two segments, compress them both, And then continue reading data in as follows. So it's actually pretty cool. You can see this happening. This was this is the resource usage we took a screen cap of when processing a 24 million row table with just one partition. The second line on the chart is memory usage. The first is network, and the bottom one is CPU. So you can actually see the network here at the start stays pretty high and then falls off. This is actually just reading in the first set of rows, and then eventually it falls off once it's done. The second line with memory usage, you can see that it just kind of grows steadily for the first 16 million rows as they're read and encoded. And then we get a little bit of a spike. This spike is actually when we're splitting. We found that there's still more rows after our 16 million, right? So this spike is us splitting the data into segments 1 and 2, and then we start to read and encode data again. We can compress in parallel with reading and encoding. At the end here, we compress segment 3, and then you'll see a large CPU spike when we do our process recalc, where we rebuild those calc columns and hierarchies. That's something that's going to be pretty dependent on your the data that's in your model. In general, you want a rough correlation between the number of cores on your CPU and the segments that are being used, because we can run these in parallel. So when we do processing, like I mentioned before, typically we want to create a new partition for new chunks of data coming in. It's important to be a little bit careful when you're defining the queries for these new partitions, because there's nothing stopping you from having one partition, which is select star from some table, creating another partition, and I can say select star from table again, and now I'll have my table will contain duplicates for every single row. So if you're going to do this, make sure that you're very careful to make sure that you don't overlap your partitions or have gaps in your partitions. Then, like I said, we want to do process data on a new partition, and then finally process recalc on the end. We don't want to do multiple process fulls unless we do this in a single transaction. The reason is we'll just ignore your process recalc and we'll only do the final one if you put it in a single batch. So we can, there's a single transaction batch for processing tables in parallel. Right now we don't have parallel processing of a single table's partition. So what this means is we can process two separate tables in parallel, but we can't process multiple partitions of a single table, right? Every once in a while, do process defrag. If you notice that your processing is taking an extra long time, something that's actually pretty important in the tabular model is to remove unused columns. And maybe you wouldn't necessarily think about it right away, especially if this is something your model was birthed sort of from maybe an end user who created this model, like I said, and so it sort of graduated through these steps. It's often the case where we can have lots of sort of unused columns hanging around. You can merge partitions to reduce this sort of fragmentation and speed up queries. Maybe every once in a while you're doing a new partition for every month. Maybe after the year is over, you want to merge all of those months into a single year partition and manage it like that. Otherwise, your partitions will grow quickly out of hand. RI violations in the tabular model We assign a blank value. You don't get any error during processing, so you can continue on. It's something you'll want to look for occasionally to make sure that these RI violations are expected, because we won't warn you about them. So let me jump over here real quick. Just returning to the DMVs that I mentioned earlier, you'll see the used size for each column. And you can see pretty quickly that something like effect finance amount, which is a decimal value that uses up a lot of space, like I said. So sometimes, depending on the precision that you need on these columns, you want to change the data type appropriately. And then if you actually look at the next couple ones, sales order number is using up a lot of space. Why might that be? Well, the values are probably fairly sparse. So there's very high. Are we really doing reporting on, you know, sales order numbers or tracking numbers? Probably not, right? And if I go and remove those from my queries, my tabular model will actually be able to become much smaller. Our queries will be faster. Processing won't take as long. So like I said, these DMVs can be a very useful tool in sort of being able to speed up processing and managing your model. If we look at the memory being used on the server, obviously each one of your databases are stored in server memory. Everything in the tabular model, for the most part, is stored in RAM, right? And we need to have enough memory so that we can have all of your databases loaded into memory at all times. There's the formula engine, right? Takes up a certain amount of memory. And then the VertiPack, the storage engine, caches will also take up another chunk of memory so that we can respond quickly to requests. So there's a couple settings that you have to control this information. There's a VertiPack memory limit and then total memory limit. What this does is you can specify the VertiPack can only store up to 60% of the available server memory. And if you start to go beyond this, we'll actually actively kill sessions, and maybe you'll start to see errors if you run up against this limit. And then there's also one other property, which is the VertiPack paging policy. What this does is it lets you start to have paging on your system, but we do need the dictionaries to remain in memory at all times. If we take a look at querying, what's great about the tabular model is that we support both MDX and DAX. So this means that all of the old things that were built on a multidimensional model, if you convert it to tabular, everything will still work, all of the client tools, right? In the case of Excel pivot tables, they actually send MDX queries. PowerView, the PowerView client, sends DAX. So they both go to the formula engine, right? And the formula engine will call into VertiPack when possible. VertiPack can execute queries in parallel with one core per segment. The good thing about when we can push these things to VertiPack is VertiPack is optimized for querying over the compressed data, right? So it's much faster to operate on the distinct values where we can rather than having to read them back out. And these are actually things you can take a look at in the profiler. We'll take a look at that in a second. As far as query performance, so on a laptop, we can scan 50 billion plus rows per second for 100 billion rows of data. If you have a typical sort of server, we can scan it up to 20 billion rows per second. And these are pretty huge values. The reason being, speed, as I mentioned before, performance. Why this is important is there's actually a thing called Amdahl's law in computing. And what Amdahl's law says is the maximum benefit you can get by parallelizing an action, right? Typically, the way you think, oh, we'll speed it up by doing it in parallel. Well, the problem is, even if you can parallelize up to 95% of the actions of your program, you'll actually only get a 20x increase in performance. So when we can push these things down into VertiPack, we can gain that performance. It's so important that we can do this. So now I'll jump over. We can take a look at some of these things. Query evaluation, you can monitor with the SQL profiler. Let's create a new trace. I've actually defined these already. You can see if you want to show all events under query processing, you can take a look at the DAX query plan that's being used maybe by your reporting tools to query these things. And you can also take a look at the VertiPack engine to see what's being executed there. So if I go ahead and start this trace, let me create a new pivot table. Let's go like this. And if I take a look at something like internet sales by state province, if we jump over to the profiler, we can actually see a ton of events here. Like I said, the DAX query plan, so this is what is actually being sent to the model itself. We can see the storage engine, VertiPack queries take place. And then depending on what our model looks like and the queries that are being sent against it, if I go again, we can see this event here is the storage engine cache match. So like I mentioned before, VertiPack will cache these requests so that it can respond even faster, right, as we allow. All right, so that's kind of a deep dive into the tabular model itself, looked at processing, the way the VertiPack storage engine works, some ways that you can use things like DMVs to help diagnose information about maybe why you're having some performance issues. There's some related content here today and throughout TechEd. There's a couple different sessions. There's querying in DAX, very interesting. Like I said, you can send both DAX and MDX. Lots of times your performance issues can actually be solved at query time by changing the structure of your DAX functions. It turns out that the shape sort of your query and the way that you would get something can actually have quite a large impact on performance. There's a lab about developing and deploying tabular models. And then if you're interested, later tonight at Ask the Experts, I'll be there with my colleague Miguel talking about data discovery and visualization. Here's a look at the track resources. You can find all this stuff online after TechEd is complete. And then, of course, remember to complete your evaluation form. That's how we can kind of get a good grip on whether these sessions are helpful, what was useful, what was not, what we can do to improve, because at these conferences, right, it's all about giving you guys the best information and what you need to be effective. So here's the code for this session. And I would love to try to field any questions you have. If not, I think that wraps it up. So the question was, in terms of scalability, when would you be looking to move from Power Pivot to a tabular model running on a server somewhere? And it depends. With scalability, if you're talking about just simply raw size of the model, there's actually no hard limit on the size that the Excel workbook can grow to. But what often happens is the user's computers, or wherever you have this thing stored, whether it's on SharePoint or something, the problem is we need RAM, right? We need to be able to load this all into memory. So if whatever machine that you're going to open this workbook on can't fit the entire model into RAM, that's when you'll want to push it into a server. From a scalability perspective, with other things, you can consider things like security, right? I can't define any security or anything in the Power Pivot workbook itself. I have to move that to a tabular server in order to get that sort of control.
Does that I guess I would like more rough figures in terms of, I guess, the fact table of X something. Mostly in your previous experience, I guess the kind of customer that would be looking into which section. Not looking at the other features like security, just explicitly focusing on scalability. When would you really be looking at just rough examples, if you have some in mind? That's just a right. Big picture. I understand the concept that you gave back, and clearly, but just like more rough examples, I guess, if you have some.
Yeah, right. So in a Power Pivot workbook, I know that you can load and be pretty performant on hundreds of millions of rows of data. It really depends greatly on the data that you have yourself, right? Because the compression can be so wildly different depending on what your data looks like. So I would say if you get more than probably the hundreds of millions of rows, you'll probably want to be able to put it into a server. Ultimately, like I said, there's no requirement. Restriction put on the workbook itself. So as long as whatever machine that it's on can fit the model into memory, there's nothing that would prevent you from just keeping the model inside Power Pivot. The responsiveness, et cetera, should be the same.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes?
I saw your first slide. You were talking about, and I haven't actually looked into it, it might be a stupid question, but can you do row-level security?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, so row-level security, let me jump real quickly to this workbook. That's something you can do in SSDT. So if I have something like... I actually have an example of it myself. I just didn't know if we would have time to get to it. If we have our tables, we can go to, let's see, model, and then roles. And what you can do here is you can define basically roles, which are what data does a user have access to, right? If you create a new one, you just give it a name. You can give it specific permissions. You can say, can this user read? Can they read and process the model? Can they only process it? Are they administrator? Can they do everything? Right? And so here, once I define the role itself and just the basics, here, you can assign a DAX filter for each table. And then what will happen is this will be evaluated for each row of the table, And then basically the user will only have access to the rows for which this expression evaluates to true. So for instance, I have one defined here, which says basically if let me show you the data table instead of just showing you the stacks function. Yes. So I've imported a table here called security. For me, it's quite small because it's just a demo, right? But here I can define some usernames. So every time you connect to a model remotely, we have an effective username you can get with the username DAX function. So what we can do is we can actually do some dynamic security where I can have a list of the users that maybe will be connecting to my model. And in my case, I have sales territory group. So what I can do is I can basically write a DAX expression that says, if the sales territory group in the DIM sales territory table matches what you have permissions on in this table, then those will be the only the rows that you can see, right? And then that obviously will filter down the rest of the tables as it goes, right? So like I said, you can define sort of any DAX expression to give access to these sorts of things. Does that help? Okay, great. It does. Yes, sir. Maybe not. Nope. You're just stretching. Never mind. Anything else?
So I guess could you start writing one of these models without Power Pivots? I mean, could you start right off from the Visual Studio?
Yeah, so what you could do, if you just create a new project, I could just say new analysis services tabular project. You define a workspace server. So what this is, instead in Excel, we have AS running kind of in the Excel process. Here you need to have a workspace server so that we can deploy and get this information. It'll bring you to here. You can import your data. Then give some impersonation info if you need. I would recommend using impersonation. In my case, I'm just going to use a service account since it's running as me, right? And I can pick the tables I want, import them, and be on my way. It's just like Power Pivot.
Okay.
So the thing that is different, like I mentioned, is that workspace database. So if I jump over to SSMS quickly, you can see there's some databases here that are named some model and then some GUID, right? That's actually sort of the workspace database that's being used by SSDTBI to be able to handle this.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. It's my pleasure. Please fill out the evaluation and come find me at Ask the Experts.